Hello, freaks, geeks, tomb dwellers, and welcome back to another episode of Tombs of Horror after my short little break. My birthday was rather low-key and quiet, but it was good. I mean, it's kind of nice just to have a nice little quiet birthday every once in a while. I was never really into celebrating my birthday anyway. It's just another fucking day to me. But sometimes it's nice to just lay back and have a low-key kind of birthday. Before we get into everything today, I just wanted to bring up something new that I've added to the podcast. If you listen to this on Spotify, if you click on the episode description, you will see that I have added a Q&A kind of section that you can actually type in and answer my question about. So like I said, if you click, or starting with the 50th episode celebration, if you listen to this on Spotify and you click on episode description, at the bottom of it, like I said, you'll find a Q&A section. You know, just say whatever you want, ask a question, and I'll answer it. Or if I ask to suggest something, or ask you guys to suggest something, and you give an answer, I will read it on the next episode. So yeah, if you guys could, maybe it will make the show a little more interesting. So if you could, you know, if you feel like it, click on that and ask a question or give me a suggestion or whatever the fuck you want. This is also going to be a much shorter episode than usual, a kind of a return of the minisode, if you will, because while this is kind of a more serious topic, more serious than I get to on this podcast, we will have a little more fun with it towards the end. But, you know, I don't really like to be too serious about shit. So that's why this is going to be kind of like a return of the minisode episode, if that makes any fucking sense. But today, with the recent news that the lawsuit that has been going on for well over a decade between the original Friday the 13th writer Victor Miller and director/producer Sean S. Cunningham over the rights to the series is making progress and might be coming to an end soon. Everybody's once again beginning to get excited at the prospect of seeing another entry in this extremely long-running but beloved iconic slasher franchise. I thought I'd talk about number one. There's been a debate for some years going over the, or asking the question, if you will, if over how sympathetic we can really be towards Jason Voorhees. And the bigger question is the representation of mental health in the Friday the 13th movies ultimately helpful or harmful? Like I said, this has been a debate that has been going on for years, at least last 20 years since the franchise has been around. Well, it's been around longer than that, but you get what I mean. There is one thing that everybody can seem to agree on when it comes to this debate, and that's that there is a major teaching point that we can take away from the original film. And that is how to develop empathy for individuals who are struggling with mental illness. In the original 1980 Friday the 13th film, we learn that Jason's mother, Pamela, who is a cook at Camp Crystal Lake, witnesses Jason's drowning and goes on a rampage against the camp counselors who let it happen. And then a bunch more innocent counselors try to reopen the camp years later. This also happens in the extremely fucking bad and shitty 2009 reboot. It'll be easier for you than it was for Jason. You need to be punished for what you did to him, Pamela says in the 2009 remake, as she attempts to murder the camp counselors, who kills Mrs. Voorhees in self-defense. As it turns out, as everybody who listens to this podcast probably knows, Jason is actually still alive and goes on a vengeful murdering spree, killing innocent teens on behalf of his dead mother throughout the various Friday the 13th iterations. But whether we're talking about the original Friday the 13th film, or its 2009, once again, fucking shitty remake, we can't really diagnose Jason with one specific mental disorder, though some fans suspect that he is experiencing dissociative identity disorder, which occurs when individuals have two or more separate personalities, and this causes memory loss. Now, on a personal level, I have dated an ex, and I have known one or two other people that do have DID, and it is very possible that Jason could have had this. I mean, it's a scary, trying to think of how to phrase this, mental disorder, to witness in person, as I have. I mean, they can slip from one personality into the next in a heartbeat and not even know that they're doing it. And I've witnessed someone basically arguing with this other personality within them, but for all intents and purposes to everyone else that was watching, they were basically violently arguing with themselves. It's not a pleasant thing to have to watch, or as I'm imagine, not pleasant to go through, but I mean, it is a very real thing, and it does happen, and it could be a likely candidate for what, if Jason does in fact have a mental illness, it could be a likely candidate for what he has. And in actual published studies by actual medical students, this is a possibility that has been raised. But there's probably insufficient proof of DID symptoms for Jason to be diagnosed with this condition. Yet we do know some facts about Jason's mental health and physical challenges based on the official film canon. We know from his backstory that he is developmentally disabled, or to put it more in more cruel terms, retarded. So from that perspective, we know at least from the author of Jason's backstory that they did intend for Jason to be struggling with mental health issues. Much like Michael Myers in Halloween, Jason experiences mutism, which means he can't speak, though it's not really clear whether that's due solely to his disabilities or as a result of trauma. But it's likely a combination of multiple factors. And it's quite apparent that this is somebody who is still stunted despite his chronological age. When we see someone who simply doesn't talk anymore, we think that that might be along the lines of a conversion disorder, which is a loss of a special sense due to a specific kind of trauma. And in psychiatry, it has been well noted, studied, and published that patients with cognitive disorders have a difficult time putting words to their own feelings. Because Jason cannot speak, the viewer is forced to think differently about how Jason communicates his feelings compared to someone like Chucky or Freddy Krueger, who openly declares his desire to murder children in their dreams. And this mutism kind of causes us to stop and think, you know, what is it that Jason is likely thinking about? Or, you know, what are his impulses that he's acting on? Due to his developmental disabilities, Jason is still mentally a child, so we should, in turn, consider Jason's actions from that perspective. It's not a man who's reacting to the murder of his mother, but for all intents and purposes, he's a child. Now, there has been concerns, once again, ever since this franchise started, about, quote-unquote, the potential harm of films like Friday the 13th in potentially stigmatizing mental health issues. But there is also, what's the word I'm looking for? There is also the opportunity to emphasize with characters like Jason. But these kinds of films are also used when, like, new medical students go into college, like psychology students. And a lot of the times, the professors will tell the students to diagnose fictional characters and come up with treatment plans. The hope in doing this is that when they go into real rotations and clinical experiences, they'll bring this insight with them. Throughout the franchise, we see Jason take revenge not only on the people responsible for his mother's death, but also random people who get in the way or try to stop his vendetta. So, in this sense, it's easy to see Jason as just a monster or the villain. But based on what we know about him, we could characterize him as an empathetic villain rather than a sympathetic one. And there's room to try to understand why Jason is doing what he's doing. I guess you have to put yourself in a certain kind of mind frame and consider what's happening in the original film from the point of view of the little boy, Jason, who, for all intents and purposes, witnesses his mother's murder. You have to put yourself in the situation of that little boy and how horrified he must have been when he went into that water and how helpless he must have felt. And what kind of rage and anger you would feel at seeing your own mother decapitated right in front of you. It has been reported that doing these kinds of exercises can help generate empathy between future doctors and their patients. Now, it's the kind of empathy that someone like Jason rarely, if ever, receives in the film series. Many doctors and people who study these kinds of things believe that if Jason had received proper mental health treatment, his character may have taken a different turn, which admittedly would have made for a much more boring fucking slasher franchise. In the 12 years since last Friday the 13th movie was made, which was 2009's shitty Friday the 13th reboot, people have begun speaking more openly about mental health on social media, and which is kind of helping to reduce the stigma surrounding this once taboo topic. Which in turn has also made Hollywood ever so slightly recognize the serious impact that mental health issues in films can have on our own well-being. Many mental health professionals offer up their services as consultants on horror films to make things a little more realistic, I guess you could say. Whenever this whole court case between the rights to use the Friday the 13th name and franchise finally comes to its end, after decades of going on, there's one thing that I hope that the franchise doesn't really dive into with all this mental health issue shit being brought up. Well, it's not shit. It is a serious thing, but you get what my meaning. I hope that they don't kind of go in reverse and spoon feed us Jason's past developmental history. Since some Friday the 13th movies have delved more into Jason's traumatic childhood as a way to explain his violent behavior, I kind of think this is a wrong approach for future films if and when they do come up. Since filmmakers are doing the hard work of generating empathy for Jason and taking that task away from the viewer, I'd prefer that they try to avoid making him a sympathetic character because it would test the resolve of the viewers. You know, when it comes to a slasher franchise like this, I think people should feel disgust And they should, but in a way, they should try to overcome these feelings so that they can, feel more or be put in more of an empathetic position. Now, if we can do this, we might walk away from these movies feeling less shocked or disgusted and have a little more wisdom when it comes to mental health in general. Okay, so enough with the more serious shit. Like I said, we'd be having a little more fun with this towards the end of this episode. And with the second half, I wanted to, since we're on the topic of Jason Voorhees, I wanted to talk about some of the things in the entire franchise that don't make any fucking sense. Because if there's one fucking thing that's for sure, the one thing that's a constant theme throughout this entire franchise is that it's oftentimes confusing and a nonsensical world in which Jason and all the other characters inhabit. And one of the first things I'm going to talk about when it comes to that is that the location of Camp Crystal Lake, keeps changing with every fucking movie. The original film, 1980 film, cemented the franchise's ties to the Garden State from the very beginning, even if it was never specifically stated. The actual location of the lake and the camp itself has, however, often moved around the state and seemingly the country, depending on what film it is. Pretty much every sequel has been shot in an entirely different location, including Connecticut, California, and Georgia. The references to New Jersey become less and less, giving the lake and the campgrounds that surround it a strange, eerie sense of displacement, and which, again, doesn't really make sense in connecting each film to each other. The other thing I don't really get is why the fuck do people keep coming back to Camp Crystal Lake? I mean, everybody knows about Jason. Everybody knows what happened there. I mean, any person with any kind of fucking sense would stay as far away as possible from Crystal Lake and its surrounding areas once word got around that there had been not just one, but two maniacs out there. The fact that there had been rumors, whispers, and urban legends for years just goes to show that sometimes it's best to heed the warnings of the local town kook and steer clear of any place nicknamed Camp Blood. I mean, common sense. Which leads to the next question. I mean, since everybody is well aware of Jason's existence, why aren't there any preventative measures taking place? I mean, I guess you could say that there were at the beginning of Jason Goes to Hell, when Jason gets very well done off or taken out by the FBI. Well, for such a small area, Camp Crystal Lake must have one of the highest murder rates per capita of the entire East fucking coast. You know, from barbecued backpackers, calamity-stricken counselors, butchered bikers, and murdered morgue workers, the Crystal Lake police must have more than their hands full with all of this shit. And which makes it all seem rather absurd that from film to film, the local law enforcement seem not only inept at stopping visitors from going or being caught up in Jason's menace, but outright belligerent in their handling of the entire situation. Surely with a little foresight and some proper police or even military presence within the area, this could be all avoided and stopped from happening all over again and again and again and again and again. And something else I've always wondered about is what the fuck ever happens to all the final girls? I mean, Friday the 13th has probably one of the longest list of iconic final girls, most of which are presumably still alive. With so many survivors of Jason's massacres out there, who are able to corroborate one another's stories, it seems odd that the world would continue to ignore their warnings. But, however, with the sheer amounts of survivors from Crystal Lake, the general populace within the world of Friday the 13th doesn't seem to mind the risks involved with vacationing there anymore. After all, if Jason has been stopped every single time he strikes, maybe people have started to think of him as just, you know, a mere nuisance instead of a threatening menace. And going along with that, who the fuck keeps trying to reopen fucking Camp Crystal Lake? You know, after countless bloody murders on your land, endless massacres and camp shutdowns with attempted reopenings that follow the same endless grisly cycle of despair, it might be time to try your luck someplace else. Somebody out there in the Friday the 13th universe owns Crystal Lake land that the surrounding camp and holiday homes rest on, and they should probably start shutting things down for good. Traditionally, things haven't worked out too well for the property on Crystal Lake, and they don't ever seem to be getting much better. With all the danger of death that comes with a visit to this site, maybe the prices to rent and buy there are just too good to pass up. Who the fuck knows? And with everybody that has gone toe-to-toe with Jason, nobody has survived for as long, or no one has survived going against him for as long as Tommy Jarvis did. You know, if you consider the fact that Tommy was in part 2, part 3, the final chapter, and 3 more if you consider the 2 fan-made movies and the Friday the 13th video game. So how the fuck did the Jarvis family survive for so long when so many others lasted, you know, like 5 minutes going toe-to-toe with Jason? And because those 3 movies, part 2, part 3, and the final chapter, are all supposed to be set over a few connected days. It begins, a few connected years. It brings up the question of what Jason was doing before part 2, if he was already the adult crazed killer that we see him as. With Chris Higgins declaring in part 2 that she was attacked by Jason in the woods of Crystal Lake, 2 years before the events of the film, it is safe to deduce that he has been at large for a while. How, then, is it possible that the Jarvis family has survived living on the grounds of Crystal Lake for so long without ever coming across Jason? Even if audiences are to assume that their house is only a vacation home, they would likely have been terrorized by Voorhees at least once during the time of his known activity. And finally, the one thing out of everything that I've talked about that has consistently confused the fuck out of me and astounded me is how the fuck does Crystal Lake connect to the fucking ocean? Like, in part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, the cruise ship can leave Crystal Lake, go the fuck across the 7 seas, and end up in New York when the lake itself has never once been mentioned to connect to the fucking ocean. Throughout the series, no matter where the film had been shot, Crystal Lake was never, ever depicted as having an entrance to the ocean, let alone housing a dock big enough to hold a fucking boat of that size. And if the audiences are to continue to believe the idea that Crystal Lake is based in New Jersey, then why the fuck does it take so long for the boat to arrive there? And why didn't everybody on it just fucking drive if it takes so fucking long when it takes place in, or supposedly takes place in fucking New Jersey? It just doesn't make any fucking sense to me, like, at fucking all. Regardless of all these inconsistencies that take place in throughout the entire franchise, Friday the 13th and Jason Voorhees still remain one of the most beloved and popular franchises and slasher villains in all of slasher filmdom, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, second only to Michael Myers and Halloween. And that just about wraps it up for this episode. As always, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but you can reach me at darksyde9034@gmail.com. Drop a line, say hi, tell me you think I fucking suck, tell me you like the fucking podcast, it doesn't matter. I'll read them all, and if I like them, I'll read them on the podcast. And just a reminder, if you listen to this on Spotify or whatever else where this might appear, click on the episode description and say something on the Q&A section at the bottom of the description. Like I said, it might help make this whole podcast a little more interesting, and I'll read whatever you guys say on the next episode. And that wraps it up. As always, this has been Tombs of Horror, and I'm Dustin. See you guys next time.